program level for agencies. And just to summarize really quickly, if you look at the second page, you'll see that the total general fund spending in this bill, which includes direct general fund appropriations and open general fund appropriations, and then a adjustment for deputy and assistant commissioner reductions, is $678,822,000. The bill also tracks $104 million in new general fund revenues for net spending of $574,659,000. And in addition, this committee at this point is tracking separately some spending for two bills that are not included in the omnibus bill but that were heard by this committee. That's House Bill 1526, Representative Simon's Fair Campaign Practices Bill, and then also House File 1547, also Representative Simon, the State Elections Campaign Fund. Moving on to the third page of the spreadsheet, this is where the detailed tracking starts. And I'm going to, if it's okay with the committee, if members have an objection, let me know. I'm going to basically just try to hit the change items for each agency. But again, if you have any questions, please stop me. The first, beginning on page one of the detailed tracking, is the legislature. For the Senate, the chair's recommendation is $43.8 million. This includes an operating increase of $1.5 million and $1 million in one-time technology money. For the House, the recommendation is $62.3 million. This includes an operating increase of $5.75 million, and again, a one-time technology increase of $1 million. For the Legislative Coordinating Commission, I don't know if there are representatives in the room, but I should note that the chair's recommendation is at the full request of the LCC. The spreadsheet outlines for each office the individual increases that they were requesting, including, you should note, the revisers, one-time money for the extend bill draft system. That's on line 44. When I'm referring to a line number, that's on the very far left of the spreadsheet. Going on to page two, there's some other LCC changes that I'll just highlight quickly. On line 72 for House File 644, this is a bill that's actually being carried in the in Representative Huntley's committee for the Healthcare Access Oversight Commission, but we do carry a Healthcare Access Fund appropriation in the LCC, and we've been asked to increase it to cover this bill. Finally, down on lines 78 through 84, you'll see the individual program-wide LCC change items. This includes three legislative initiatives: House File 318, the Commission on Ethnic Heritage, at $38,000; House File 1616, the Commission to End Poverty, at $100,000; and then House File 1896 for $350,000. Those are all one-time appropriations within the LCC. That brings the LCC's total appropriation to $31.5 million. In the legislature for a whole, the recommendation is $137.7 million. Moving on to page three, the governor's office. The chair is recommending funding the governor's office at his requested level of $7.4 million. This does include the compensation adjustment included in the governor's budget. And again, I want to note that for all of the state agencies, the governor's recommended compensation adjustment of 2% each year is included. That's for every state agency, executive branch agency. Moving on to the state auditor, the chair's recommendation for the biennium is $18.5 million. This includes an increase of $1.9 million as requested by the state auditor, including money for staff retention and job Z oversight. And I should note that those two items have some offsetting revenue because of the way that the state auditor's office is funded. We do give them a direct general fund appropriation, but they do collect some revenues for their activities, and that will be reflected at the bottom of the spreadsheet. Moving on to the Attorney General's office, the chair's recommendation is total all funds, $53.3 million. That includes $49 million in general fund direct appropriations. That is the Attorney General's request and includes $3.5 million for additional attorney positions. You'll see that reflected on line 169. Finally, for the constitutional offices, moving on to the Secretary of State's office, The chair's recommendation for total direct appropriations is $16.2 million for the biennium. This includes a general fund increase of $1.4 million for several change items outlined between lines 190 and 198, including the office's full request for the Safe at Home implementation, $886,000, and then also House File 768, which was Representative Kalin's bill on absentee voting, $123 in one-time funding. The bill also includes an appropriation of the remaining HABA funds of $2.8 million. And there is also language included in this bill that has a temporary technology surcharge on some of the office's fees, and that would result in $2.2 million in special revenue funds for the office's business functions. Moving on to page 5 and the executive branch agencies. The Campaign Finance Board, the chair's recommendation for their operating budget is $1.4 million. This is the same as the governor's recommendation for that agency. We also track in this committee $4 million for the public subsidy program. That's an open general fund item. For the Investment Board, again, the chair's recommendation is at the governor's recommendation of $302,000 from the general fund. This covers the office's duties in investing the general fund itself. The majority of the office is funded through a statutory special revenue fund. On to the Office of Administrative Hearings. Beginning with the workers' compensation special payment appropriation, the chair's recommendation includes the governor's request for additional funding for one judge, workers' compensation judge position. That's $266,000. Those are expensive judges. And then on line 247, there's an additional funding in this bill of $532,000 for two additional workers' comp judges to be located in Duluth. Moving on for the general fund portion for the Office of Administrative Hearings, the chair's recommendation is $566,000 for the biennium. This is the governor's recommended funding for the agency, including the rent adjustment. Okay. On page 6, the Office of Enterprise Technology. The recommended total general fund spending for this office for the biennium is $23.3 million. I should note, if you look at the individual recommendations for 08 and 09, this does include a large amount of one-time spending for the office. Included in this is on line 278, $2 million in startup funds for the Minnesota Electronic Licensing System. The governor's request has been $15 million for that item. Also included is $10 million in one-time funding for the Comprehensive Enterprise Security Program. That's on line 284. And other change items include full funding for the governor's small agency technology request. That's $2.5 million, and that does include ongoing funding. $1 million for enterprise information management, and again, that does have funding in the base. And finally, there are two legislative initiatives included in this office. House File 176 represents Thiessen's preservation of state documents, $68,000 in one-time funding, and then House File 2147, Representative Bly's bill grants for integrated financial system, that's $200,000 in one-time funding. Now we'll move on to the Department of Administration. The first program within the department is State Facilities Services. This includes activities such as the State Architect's Office, Plant Management, and Real Estate Management. The chair's total recommended funding for this program within Department of Administration is $26.2 million. On SANA, page 6, if you look on line 314, this includes $250,000 per year for energy conservation recommissioning. That was a governor's request. And then moving on to page 7, under real estate management, there are two other governor's initiatives that have been funded in the chair's recommendation, $2.5 million for the real property enterprise system. This is the original request, I believe, was $6.7 million. And then $885,000 for relocation of the Department of Public Safety Emergency Operations. This was a supplemental request from the governor in an, after the February forecast. Moving on to state and community services, again, you'll see this includes functions such as the Information Policy Analysis Office, the State Demographer, LIMIC, and the State Archaeologist, among others. The recommendation for this program within admin is $7 million. To just note the change items, on line 334, there is $89,000 in the bill for the DNA study group. This is a CHAIRS initiative, and I should note this is one-time funding. Moving on to line 351, there is funding for the governor's initiative on the census preparation and promotion. And on line 356, the bill includes, or the Delete Everything Amendment includes $1.7 million in increased funding for the Land Management Information Center, or also known as LIMIC. Moving on now to administrative management services within the department. On page 8, you'll see at the very bottom of the page the total funding for this program is recommended at $11.4 million. This includes several change items. The Small Agency Resource Team, or SMART, is fully funded at the governor's recommendation. Two legislative initiatives that this committee just heard recently have some funding in the bill. On line 390, House File 1155, Representative Midori's Self-Advocacy Network Project, and then House File 2117, that's Representative Burns' promotion of document in the Janus. Note, the first, House File 1155, receives $250,000 a year. This is ongoing funding, and promotion of document imaging is at $75,000 in one-time funds. Moving down to materials management within this program, beginning on line 404 are the change items. The first item is $125,000 in one-time funding for the Office of Grants Management. There's $90,000 per year in ongoing funding for the Veterans Procurement Preference Bill. That was House File 137, Representative Haas. $285,000 is included for the PT Contract Savings Negotiation Unit. This was a governor's request. The chair has provided one-time funding for a pilot program. $425,000 in one-time funding is included for the targeted group disparity study. And you'll note there's some language in the bill directing the department to cooperate with local governments that are undergoing similar studies. And finally, there is some funding for Representative Paulson's state contracts website bill, House File 376. There's $50,000 is included for that bill, and that's one-time funding. Finally, moving on to page 9 to wrap up the Department of Administration. Again, two bills that were just heard by this committee are included under the fiscal agent for the department. First, on line 432, House File 2252, this was Representative Dabney's bill, the Sustainable Growth Working Group. $100,000 in one-time funding is included. And on line 433, House File 1523, the grant to disabled veterans rest camp. $500,000 in one-time money is included. And that completes the Department of Administration recommendations. The next agency is the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. The chair's recommendation for the board for the general fund in general fund spending for the biennium is $800,000. This includes the operating increase requested by the agency and also one-time funding of $65,000 for Representative Aaron Murphy's Capital Area Study. That's House File 1519. Also included in the bill is language allowing the CAP board to continue the planning, charging state agencies for project review and planning expenses, and then appropriating those special revenue funds back to the board. The estimated funds for this are $8,000 per year in special revenue funds. Moving on to the Department of Finance. The Department of Finance, the chair is recommending funding the Department of Finance at $37.7 million for the biennium. This is the governor's recommended funding level, so it includes The governor's change items on line 464, one-time funding of $315,000 for the bankruptcy council related to the Northwest Airlines case. And then on line 475, $7 million in one-time funding for the MAPS, that's the Minnesota County and Procurement System, Risk Mitigation and Replacement Plan. Department of Employee Relations. Total direct general fund recommendation is $12.3 million. Within the employee insurance program, the spending that the general fund spending we track is the open general fund appropriation for the WICRA premium. But the, moving on to human resource management, there's several change items included in the recommendation for this program. First, on line 507, is the we're tracking the savings attributable to House File 1048, Representative Plowski's bill to abolish the department and transfer the duties. The bill includes tracking a $500,000 reduction in 08-09 and then $700,000 in 10-11. House File 219, Representative Walker's bill is included in the recommendation, and there is some funding provided for this at $389,000 in general fund money. Moving down to healthcare purchasing, beginning on line 515, the governor had a request for the Center for Healthcare Purchasing Improvement. This recommendation includes $500,000 for that item. That's half of what the governor requested. In addition, on line 517, there's $350,000 included for House File 1588. That's Representative Winkler's bill, electronic health records pilot. And finally, the rest of the change items within DOER are all for the governor's compensation adjustment. Moving on to the Department of Revenue. There are three items included in the Department of Revenue's recommendation. First of all, note that the total funding, this is going on to page 13, but I'll have to backtrack, is $249,878,000 for the biennium. That is all fund spending. The general fund recommendation is $241,618,000. In addition to the governor's... I'll just wait a second. Okay, again, for the Department of Revenue, which starts on page 11, the two major items to note, the two change items, are the tax compliance initiative, and this is scattered throughout various budget activities within the department, but I'll tell you the net impact of the chair's recommendation. And I will note that I've got these all reflected on change item lines that say Governor's Tax Compliance Initiative, and I will adjust the spreadsheet to show that the House has recommended doing double what the governor recommended doing in tax compliance. So the total spending to hire new auditors, new staff, is $20.5 million. The expected revenues are $102.4 million. Which brings in a net of $81.9 million in new general fund revenues. And then the other item to note is on line 601 on page 12 of the spreadsheet, the chair has recommended including $12 million in one-time funding for the department's requested integrated tax system. Moving on to the Department of Military Affairs, which begins on page 13. The total recommended spending for the Department of Military Affairs is $41.9 million. This includes $41.3 million in direct general fund spending, and then also $676 million in a direct appropriation from the Special Revenue Fund for the Support Our Troops license plate revenues, and those funds from those license plates are split between the Department of Military Affairs and the Department of Veterans Affairs and used for various programs to assist veterans and members of the National Guard and their families. Other change items within the Department of other items within the Department of Military Affairs. On page 13, line 663, the chair has recommended full funding for the governor's armory maintenance increase. That's $3.5 million. On line 679, $185,000 is included for the special assessments. Then on the following two lines, you'll see $150,000 is included for Starbase, Minnesota. That was the project that the committee just heard a presentation on yesterday. And then an additional $25,000 for the longitudinal study that was discussed with Representative Swigum. And then moving on to line 14, the final change items within the Department of Military Affairs, beginning on line 693. $1.5 million in one-time funding for the reintegration program. This is at the governor's requested level. $560,000 is included for the general support employees. This is ongoing funding. And then finally, on line 696, House File 451, the Honor Guard reimbursement bill that was heard by the committee yesterday, $61,000 is included in this bill for that item. And that concludes it. The recommendations for the Department of Military Affairs. For the Lawful Gambling Control Board, the chair is recommending the governor's request of $5.7 million. This does include $139,000 for the compensation adjustment, and the Lawful Gambling Control Board is funded through the Special Revenue Fund. Moving on to the next page, on page 15 of the spreadsheet, the Minnesota Racing Commission, again, funded at the governor's requested level of $2,029,000, including $359,000 recommended for the technology upgrade for the commission. And again, these are special revenue funds. Moving real quickly, hopefully, through the rest of the spreadsheet, these are some of the standard appropriations that are done in this bill. Contingent accounts, $500,000 is recommended for the general fund contingent account. These are accounts that are set aside for emergencies, and the governor has to consult with the Legislative Advisory Commission on the use of these funds. $322,000 is allocated for the tort claims. For Minnesota State Retirement System, this bill includes $3.3 million for legislative retirement and constitutional officers' retirement. This is not the retirement program that most of the members are in that are a part of this committee, but the previous retirement program that was a pay-as-you-go system, and these appropriations cover the cost of that. Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund at $18 million. This is the forecasted level. And then on line 954, or 956 is the actual number, this is a new one-time item of $4.1 million for some compensation for the pre-1969 teachers. Finally, wrapping up the pension aids that are always carried in this bill, $37.5 million is included in open general, or tracked in open general fund spending for the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Aid. And although the spreadsheet tracks it as Minneapolis Teachers Retirement, that is funding that now goes to the Teachers Retirement Association to cover the cost of the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Plan that was rolled in, consolidated with TRA. On line 966, you'll just see the cap on the statutory operating expenses for the state lottery. This is not actually appropriated in the bill, but we do include this cap in the language of the bill, and you'll see that in Article 1. And finally, we come to the end of the spreadsheet that shows the general fund reconciliation. On lines 972 through 980, you'll see the total direct spending for all of the funds within this bill, including on line 973, the $634,898 in direct appropriations from the general fund. On line 987 is the $44.7 million in open general fund spending that this division tracks against its target. And finally, on lines 1011 through 1018 are the changes in general fund revenues that are a result of language within this bill. That includes the governor's tax compliance initiative with new revenues of $51.2 million, and then, as I noted before, the House is proposing to double that initiative, so another $51.2 million. The next two lines reflect the AUDIFIP and state pension aid offsets and LGA offsets for the state auditor, $1.2 million and $794,000, respectively. And then finally, on line 1017, there was a bill before the committee, I believe it was Representative Hansen's bill, to allow the legislative auditor to retain some audit fees that currently go to the general fund. And this is reflected as a loss of general fund revenue, which is why it shows up as a negative of $250,000. Real quickly, right below that, you'll see the non-general fund revenue changes within the bill. This temporary technology surcharge that I noted earlier within the Secretary of State's office, $880,000 for a bill that I believe it was House Bill 1608 to standardize online and paper filing fees. And then finally, again, the governor's recommendation related to the CAP Board special revenue funds. And at the very bottom of this page, you'll see beginning on line 1029, how we reconcile to the committee's target. The recommendations include $634,898,000 in direct appropriations. The chair is also recommending a reduction in deputy and assistant commissioners and political appointees, and including savings of $760,000 in fiscal year 08-09. And $7.6 million in fiscal year 10-11. And finally, the open appropriations, again, are $44.7 million. This subtotals to, on line 1034, $678.8 million in general fund spending. This spending is offset against the new general fund revenues that are raised as in this bill. And that's $104.2 million. So I net those revenues out against the spending. So it's the $678.8 million less the $104 million, bringing the total net state government general fund spending to $574,659,000. And then, as I noted before, the committee is currently tracking against its target also $880,000 for bills that move separately. And the combination of those would bring the total spending to the target of $575,541. And that's the spreadsheet.
Okay. Now we'll turn to Mrs. Shepherd to go through the articles 2 through 5. Oh, are you going to go? Are you going to point out any of the?
Madam Chair, members, I will. The language articles of the bill are divided into four articles, Articles 2 and 3, which I will explain, and then my colleague, Matt Gehring, who has worked on the election issues, is here, and he's going to highlight some of the things in Articles 4 and 5, which deal with election issues. I'm not going to go over Article 1, because that is all the language that implements the spreadsheet items that Ms. Roberts just described. I'm going to be working from the bill itself, or the Delete Everything Amendment that you have in front of you. There's also a summary of the bill prepared that goes through section by section on all these things. And I'll just go through quickly, and if you have questions, please just stop me and ask. I'm beginning on page 17 with Article 2. Section 1 of that article has a schedule for consideration of legislation which requires certain agency bills to be delivered at a certain time of year. Budget bills and policy bills. Sections 2 through 5 all deal with legislative matters. They deal with the printing of bills. They require a joint legislative public information office, and they require the House and the Senate to adopt rules that set one time for convening daily sessions in both houses, and that encourage a system of joint standing committees, or a system under which committees with similar jurisdiction would meet at the same time. On page 18, section 6 expands the membership of the Pension Commission from 10 members to 14 members. Section 7 is Representative Yaros's bill that was heard yesterday, Minnesota Office on Ethnic Heritage and New Americans. I will point out one change that staff made while we were putting this together. You'll be interested to know that the bill that I presented yesterday to you required the membership of the commission on page 19, line 14, to be ethically diverse, and changed that to read ethnically.
Sure you want to do that?
Page 20, line 8, is the language that Ms. Roberts referred to earlier that allows the legislative auditor to retain revenues it receives from auditing metropolitan agencies. Section 9 requires the governor to appoint a poet laureate. Section 10 is from a Secretary of State bill, which I will describe a bit later. There's a number of business services changes related to the Secretary of State, and Section 10 is one. Section 11 is the temporary technology surcharge that Ms. Roberts referred to on some business service filings with the Secretary of State's office. This section expires June 30th, 2009. The next group of sections, beginning at the bottom of page 21 and continuing all the way through page 29, is from a state auditor bill that the committee heard yesterday, and this primarily is clarifying the definition of political subdivision for purposes of the state auditor's laws and making related changes in all of the sections that refer to that. That continues on the very bottom of page 29 and page 30. There is a section that authorizes the Attorney General to advise and assist veterans and their families as to services available from public and private agencies. Section 33, I believe, was a staff error. This was not a section that belonged here, and I think there's an amendment that's going to delete that section. Section 34 is Representative Winkler's bill on the Minnesota Legislative Commission on Terrorism and Disaster Preparedness. That continues over to the top of page 33. That section, which is placed in the Data Practices Act, actually relates to an initiative relating to grants management. I believe this was Representative Kahn's bill, and I think this also was a department initiative. Section 36 on page 34 deals with legislative budget proposals, legislative and budget proposals made by the executive branch, and it provides that after the budget is presented to the legislature, that all of the material, including preliminary drafts, becomes public at that point. Section 37 provides that parking spaces in front of the Capitol must be reserved for the public. Section 38 is for the CAP board. Under current law, the CAP board collects fees from state agencies that have projects that the CAP board needs to be reviewed, and this appropriates those fees to the CAP board. Section 39 is changing a reference on some economic information that is submitted by the Commissioner of Finance, just to refer to the chair of the Senate Finance Committee instead of the State Government Finance Committee. Sections 40 and 41 both deal with the Commissioner of Finance providing some budget-related information to the legislature. Section 40 requires that after the release of budget forecasts in November of the even year and February of the odd year, the Commissioner would provide the legislature information illustrating how the base level budget is projected to be spent for the next biennium. And the next section provides that after the November forecast, the Commissioner would also forecast cash flow for the general fund, showing expected maximum and minimum balances for each month of the forecast period. Section 42 requires the governor's budget bills to be submitted within 2 weeks after the governor submits his operating budget. Section 43 relates to continuing appropriations. It provides that if a major appropriation bill to fund state agencies has not been passed in the same form by the House and the Senate and presented to the governor by July 1st of an odd-numbered year, then the base level appropriations for the state agencies covered by that bill continue for 1 month until July 31st of that fiscal year. Section 44 on the top of page 36 relates to an existing authority of the Commissioner of Finance to bill agencies for statewide system services, and this strikes language that says, that currently reads that billing must be based only on usage of services related to the Intertechnologies Division. Sections 45 and 46 are Representative Kahn's light pollution bill that was presented to the committee earlier this week, and that continues all the way over to page 38. The bottom of page 38, section 47 strikes from the existing law governing the percent for art for state buildings the limitation of $100,000 for each building. So that cap would be stricken. On page 39 and continuing through onto page 40 and 41 and 42 is Representative Kahn's bill on state agency grants management. This was a bill that was presented to the committee. And that goes all the way to the bottom of page 42, where there are a number of sections continuing on to page 44, which is a Department of Administration bill, House File 2065, that deals with strategic sourcing and enterprise procurement. These sections all relate to that bill. There is one other section that is not related to that bill that is in the middle of these. It's on the bottom of page 44 and the top of page 45. This is section 60, which is Representative Paulson's House File 376, requiring the Commissioner of Administration to maintain a website with a searchable database on state contracts and grants. Picking up after that, section 61, and I believe continuing on all the way through page 48 and the top of page 49, I believe that all of these sections, again, are from House File 2065, the Enterprise and Strategic Procurement Initiative. I'm not positive. There may be a section in there that doesn't relate to that, but I believe these all do. In the middle of page 49, section 67 forbids state agencies from entering into a contract for operation of a call center or a contract whose purpose is to provide similar services answering or responding to calls on behalf of an agency, and it provides that state agencies have to hire state employees to provide these services. This would apply to contracts entered into or renewed or extended after this bill becomes effective. Section 68 deals with reverse auctions and states, the new language states that reverse auction cannot be used to procure engineering design services or architectural services or for building and construction contracts. Section 69 on the bottom of 49 and the top of 50 is the legislation that Ms. Roberts referenced, which provides that veterans would be a targeted group under the state targeted group purchasing program. Section 70 is another section that relates to the provision Ms. Roberts mentioned, authority of the legislative auditor to retain the fees it receives for auditing the state fair. Section 71 and 72 relate to domestic partners in the state employee group insurance program. 71 defines domestic partner, and 72 provides that if a collective bargaining agreement provides state-paid health insurance for spouses, it must be made available to domestic partners on the same terms. Section 73 is making permanent a voluntary unpaid leave of absence program that has applied in recent biennium for state employees, and this continues on to page 52. The bottom of page 52 is Representative Kahn's pay equity for state contractors bill that the committee heard yesterday, and this continues through the end of page 53. Section 75 at the top of page 54 is a section that relates to the state auditor provisions that I mentioned earlier, clarifying the definition of political subdivision for state auditors. Section 76 relates to the Minnesota State High School League. It does two things. It requires that the rules of the league are subject to the Administrative Procedure Act, and it establishes a process under which existing rules would go through, be readopted through the APA if requested by 100 or more people. This subdivision would not apply to rules of competition or rules establishing seasons. And it clarifies that it provides that the governor's veto authority of administrative rules would apply to the league rules. Paragraph E at the top of page 55 provides that during the upcoming school year, a new Minnesota High School League transfer policy would apply only to postseason competition. Section 77 on page 55 is Representative Walker's bill that the committee heard recently relating to sick leave use by domestic partners and spouses, siblings, parents, grandparents, step-parents. At the bottom of page 55 on section 78 is the honor guard provision that I believe the committee heard yesterday. Also yesterday, the committee heard a bill creating a non-appropriated fund, a new fund for the National Guard. That goes all the way through the bottom of page 56 and the top of page 57. Section 80 on the top of page 57 is the bill the committee heard yesterday requiring the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to pay up to $50 to local units that provide an honor detail, with Representative Swigum's amendment about payments to students who play at those ceremonies. The next group of sections are, I believe, all from House File 1608, which was a Secretary of State Business Services bill. That begins on the bottom of page 57, and it continues all the way through 58 and 59, page 60, 61, 62, 63, all to the bottom of page 64. I believe, I'm not positive, but I believe all those sections are from House File 1608. At the bottom of page 64 is a provision that forbids the state lottery from moving its Virginia office to another location or from reducing the complement employed at that office. On the very bottom of page 64 is a provision dealing with amending the existing law that requires public pension plans to file investment reports. It requires that the reports have to be filed electronically with the state auditor unless the state auditor determines that's not feasible, and then it requires the state auditor to attempt to provide these reports on the auditor's website. The next group of sections also is from House File 1608, a different article of that relating to notaries. That begins on the bottom of page 65 and continues through page 67 at the bottom. The very bottom of page 67 is a different issue. This relates to health insurance for units of local government. This was a bill the committee heard recently. This amends the definition of dependent to provide that at their discretion, local governments can broaden the definition of dependent to include people other than the spouse and unmarried children. Section 100 is a section that Ms. Roberts referenced earlier, which provides for a reduction. It's for billing of an LGA account for services provided by the tax increment financing investment and finance division of the state auditor for required audit. You'll notice on page 68, line 12, it's increasing the amount to be billed from there. Section 68 is a provision from the Secretary of State's office. It's relates to electronic real estate recording. The new language is on page 68, line 29. It provides that the currently created electronic real estate recording task force can amend standards that were set by a former task force and set new standards, and further provides that documents that are recorded in conformity with these standards and with pilot projects meet the requirements of this section 507.24. Ms. Roberts referenced earlier the genetic information work group on page 69, section 102. This section extends the reporting date for that group from January 15th, 08 to January 15th, 09. Ms. Roberts also mentioned that the what previously had been bond funding for the Starbase Minnesota program on page 70, section 103, is converted to a general fund appropriation. And on section 104, the authority to sell bonds is reduced by the amount that is converted to a general fund appropriation. Section 105 prohibits demolition of the Ford building on University Avenue during the upcoming biennium. Section 106 is the task force Ms. Roberts mentioned earlier to work with the Commissioner of Administration on a disparity study. Section 107 requires the Commissioner of Finance to provide a report specifying how state budgeting practices differ from generally accepted accounting principles and why. Section 108 requires the Commissioner of Administration to collect rent revenues for two new state buildings, the Elmer Anderson Building and the Orville Freeman Buildings, to be set aside in a segregated special revenue fund for deferred maintenance and building repair costs. Section 109 is Representative Lilly's bill providing compensation for the state government shutdown in 2005. You may recall there was discussion in the committee yesterday of changing the mechanism by which that compensation would be provided, and the new mechanism is on page 72, line 6. It basically says that for employees who were compensated previously, either in cash or in vacation, are going to get a new payment equal to the previous one. Section 110 is an electronic document study and report. This was House File 176 of Representative Thiessen's. It requires the CIO of the state to do a study and report to the legislature on how electronic documents can be created, maintained, exchanged in a manner that encourages government control, access, choice, and interoperability. And there would be a report back next January. At the bottom of page 72 and the top of 73 is House File 1598, which is ratifying the state's labor agreements and compensation plans. The bottom of page 73, a state employee electronic health records pilot project. I believe this was the bill of Representative Thiessen's, requires Minsky and Dewar to collaborate on establishing a pilot project to provide consumer-owned electronic personal health records to participants in the state employee group insurance program. Section 113 on page 74 authorizes the director of the Office of Enterprise Technology, with the approval of the Commissioner of Finance, enter into contracts for the electronic licensing project and for the integrated revenue system in the Department of Revenue. It authorizes a contract in which a vendor initially pays all or part of the cost, so that the state accounting system wouldn't necessarily show an encumbrance for some or all of the contract liability at the time the contract was entered into. It requires the director, before entering into a contract, to get approval of the Commissioner of Finance for a plan for how payments would be made under these contracts, and if they would be performance-based payments, the plan would have to describe the criteria for making the payments. If the director intends to pay for some or all of the contract through savings accrued by state agencies, it would have to describe these savings and how those savings would be captured so as to be available to make payments under the contract. The director would be required to present the plan to specified legislative committee chairs when presenting it to the Commissioner of Finance for the Commissioner of Finance's approval. And there's further reporting over time if the director enters into contracts. The top of page 75 is the language to implement the appropriation Ms. Roberts mentioned for pre-69 teachers. The bottom of page 75 is a temporary provision that goes along with Representative Kahn's pay equity for state contractor provision, which I mentioned earlier. Page 76, section 116, is the Sustainable Growth Work Group in the form presented by Representative Daphne yesterday. Section 117 requires House and Senate staff to assist the Legislative Coordinating Commission with new duties assigned to it by this act. Section 118 is a requirement that during the upcoming biennium, executive agencies must consider using services provided by the government training services before contracting with outside vendors for similar services. Section 119 is the repealer section. The repealers, the first one, 6.56, is part of the state auditor provision. It's repealing the current definition of political subdivision because that was changed earlier in the year. 16A.102 is the price of government resolution. 16C.055 is a requirement for a 2002 report by the legislative auditor on state barter arrangements. That time obviously is passed. 16COH subdivision 4A relates to a performance evaluation of work done on professional and technical contracts. I neglected to include in my summary 69.051 subdivision 1C, and I'm going to have to look that one up. It relates to volunteer firefighter investment reporting, I think, but I'll have to check that one. 128C.03 is the current process for the State High School League hearing on rules, which is replaced by the APA process. 359.085 subdivision 8 relates to the Secretary of State's initiatives on notaries and when signatures are required. And 645.44 subdivision 19 is the definition of fee and tax. Article 3 is in its entirety relating to best value contracting. I won't go through any of it because this is taken from House File 1351, Article 10. It's an article that was put on the transportation omnibus bill. The concept has been heard as part of House File 571, Representative Hillstrom's bill. In general, what this does is define best value contracting for purposes of construction contracts. It does this in the laws governing the Department of Administration, and all of the rest of the sections in Section 3 then go through and reference back to that definition and concept in the laws governing a variety of political subdivisions. So, Madam Chair, that is the end of my presentation on Article 3. That carries all the way through to page 91 of the bill.
Actually, I would like to pass the technical amendment, which is the 837 amendment. That these are all things that were mistakes in the bill or mistakes in how the bill was transmitted. Mistakes in discussions with staff or mistakes in how the bill was transmitted. In one case, we used an original bill rather than a bill as it had passed through committee. So, that's just to put the bill in the way the author would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. And next, we'll now go on to Article 4.
Madam Chair, Articles 4 and 5 are both elections-related articles. So rather than, it would probably be easier to just go one, start with number 1 and
Matt
go through, but that's not going to make sense.
You're in this committee.
Sorry. Okay. Matt Gehring, I'm also an analyst in House Research, and I do elections issues. So I've worked on these sections. There's a number of different elections bills that make up Article 4 and Article 5, so I think what I'll do is just go through each of those bills individually and then point you to the specific sections that you can find in Article 4 that deal with these topics. So we'll start with the first one is House File 1223, which is Representative Hilty's bill. This can be found in Section 7 and also 45 and 46, which would be pages 95 and 119 and 120. This bill and these sections deal with registration on Election Day and specifically expand the types of identification that can be used to prove residence when you're attempting to vote or attempting to register to vote on Election Day. It allows a person to show a current photo ID along with a utility bill or a lease that has the individual's name and address on it. That is sufficient to prove residence. It also allows recognized tribal government identification card to be used to prove residence. These sections also permit, they modify the way that employees of residential facilities can vouch for residents of that facility for purposes of their registration to vote. And I believe that's it for this section. Oh, there's also sections 45 and 46 deal with challengers, and they require challengers to swear an oath that they'll abide by the laws governing challengers, and also require that challengers be a resident of the state of Minnesota. The next bill is House File 1546. This is Representative Simon's bill. This can be found on pages 100 to 103, in sections 11, 12, 13, and also in 67. This deals with automatic registration of voters. This bill basically modifies the procedures that are currently in place and requires that applicants for driver's licenses or other types of state identification that are specified in these sections will be automatically registered to vote, assuming they're eligible to vote, unless they opt out of the system. The provision on section 67 requires that this automatic registration computerized system be tested to be shown that it works before people are actually registered to vote automatically. The third bill is House File 768. This is Representative Kalin's bill. It deals with absentee voting. This can be found on pages 103 to 107, sections 15 through 19, and also section 21. These sections deal with absentee voting. Specifically, they allow people to vote by absentee ballot without having to show a reason. Currently, under law, you have to have a specific reason you have to reasonably expect to not be at the polling place on election day. These sections allow a person to vote by absentee regardless of whether they reasonably expect to be away. It also permits agent delivery of absentee ballots in certain circumstances. Under current law, this already exists under current law for certain people, and these sections expand that to include others as well, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but we're expanding the allowance for agents to deliver ballots. The fourth bill is also Representative Kalin's bill. It's House File 1259, which is the Overseas and Uniformed Voting Act. This permits, first, it allows the electronic transfer of ballots to voters who are overseas who want to vote by absentee. This isn't online voting. This is allowing transfer of ballots electronically to them, and they still have to return the ballot by mail. These sections also allow allow certain eligible citizens who have never resided in the United States to vote for federal offices, so long as they have a parent who is eligible to vote in the state of Minnesota. And finally, this section also allows the Secretary of State to adopt rules dealing with emergency situations, so that if the provisions of this section cannot be complied with because of a natural disaster or other emergency situation that requires the use of U.S. troops, including National Guard troops, the Secretary of State would be permitted to suspend these rules and adopt other procedures that would allow substantial compliance with the intent of these laws. Next is House File 965, which deals with election judge partisanship. This can be found on page 117 in sections 40, 41, and 54. This permits election judges to be appointed by the relevant appointing body, regardless of whether they have claimed an affiliation with a particular political party. Under current law, you have to have claimed an affiliation with a political party in order to be appointed as an election judge. This permits you to be an election judge without having that affiliation, although there still is requirement in the law that at least two election judges in each precinct be affiliated with a different party so they can perform specific duties that are outlined in other pieces of the statute. And finally, in these sections, there's an exemption for townships. Township elections are not partisan elections, and so therefore townships are exempted from this requirement of the specific partisan-related duties. Finally, is House File 1110, which is Representative Pilty's bill, and this bill sort of ended up being kind of a melting pot of all sorts of elections-related issues. I believe when I did the original summary, my subject line was campaigns, elections, and voting. So rather than go through each of those, pretty much anything that I haven't discussed that's in the bill comes from House File 1110. I guess to highlight a couple of things, establishes a new complaint process for people who have complaints related to the Help America Vote Act. It deals with numerous issues related to registration to vote and election administration, absentee voting, kind of the whole gamut of things. I should point out, though, that nothing in these articles deals with campaign finance, so we're dealing with election administration and sort of campaign processes only. So if anybody has specific questions on specific sections that come from 1110, I can answer them. Otherwise, I'll just say that everything else is that. There's also repealers at the end of Article 4, which... take out a variety of sections of law. Section 200.04 is the current Help America Vote Act complaint procedures. This section is being repealed because it's been replaced by the new procedures that are established in this article. Section 201.061, subdivision 7, deals with submission of records of people who attempt to register to vote. Under current law, they're required to... records of people who attempt to vote who don't ultimately vote because they can't prove the residence are required to be submitted to the appropriate county auditor. This is being repealed. Notice that the county auditor would no longer be required. Section 201.096 deals with the use of the statewide voter registration system for school district elections. That's also being repealed. Section 203B.02, subdivision 1A, similarly being repealed. This deals with absentee ballot voting in elections held between August 1991 and November 1992, so it's a bit outdated. Section 203B.04, subdivision 5, is a provision that has, in the discussion when this bill was initially heard in the Government Operations Committee, this section was testified that this section was redundant because it allows a voter to request an absentee ballot be automatically sent to them because of a permanent inability to go to the polls resulting from illness or disability. There are other sections of law that already deal with this, so the section has been deemed redundant and is being repealed. And finally, Section 203B.13, subdivision 3A, deals with absentee ballots, absentee ballot boards, and the creation of lists of voters that request absentee ballots. And the last Article 5, deals with what are intended to be primarily technical and terminology changes to the election statutes. These all come from House File 1670, which is Representative Morgan's bill. I guess I can go through primarily this article is made up of changes in various places of election law that modify terminology to make it consistent with the Help America Vote Act terminology. So, for example, we're changing the term registration card and replacing it with the term registration application. There are other similar technical modifications and changes throughout this bill. I guess I can answer questions on specific sections if people have them. Otherwise, that basically sums up Article 5.
Okay, thank you very much, Matt. That's a basic summary of the bill. I think we can certainly take any clarifying questions now. No questions that are of the kind of, if anyone needs any explanation about specific parts, not why is this something in here, but, you know, of the, are there any questions to be asked of a clarifying nature from the spreadsheet or on the pages of the bill while we're all here, from either members of the committee or members of the audience? Okay, well, we'll be back at 8:30 in the morning. And at 8:30 in the morning, our intention is to take testimony at that time. Take testimony, and then our attempt is to, until session or until, and then our attempt is to work on the bill within just about as soon as session is over. Whatever reasonable time to get into. Okay? Meeting adjourned.